Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome Molly Ingram, who's the Assistant Director of National Recruitment at the University of Arizona. Now, Molly is based out of Northern California. She's also on the executive board of WACAC, which is the Western Association for College Admissions Counseling. That association is basically for our colleagues in California and Nevada. So a big shout out to everyone in California and Nevada. Molly, so great to have you here today. How are you?
Yes, thank you so much, John. And I really appreciate the invite. I'm so excited to talk about University of Arizona and all things admissions related with you today.
Well, we are equally as excited and really can't wait to have this follow-up conversation because I did interview Joe Elliott back on episode 19, which was released back on April 1st of 2022. So since then, have there been any new academic programs, initiatives, or even partnerships that prospective students and their families should know about?
Yeah, so a lot of things have changed since you chatted with Joe last. We've had quite a few different academic programs in the past few 2 years, and there's always something exciting happening on campus or with the research our students are doing. I would say so most recently, our newest major for undergraduate students is a Bachelor of Science in Real Estate, and that is housed in our College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture. So we're really excited about this program. It is available for first-year students. This is the first real estate degree program that's offered in the state of Arizona, so you can't find it at any other university currently in Arizona. And it's going to be more of an interdisciplinary program that's going to focus on things like the economic, ethical, and environmental impacts of real estate on things like profit, people, and the planet. Or as the college likes to call it, the triple bottom line. Another new development on our campus is the West Region Native American Language Resource Center, which is one of only 4 centers designed by the U.S. Department of Education to lead collective efforts to empower tribal communities to revitalize and maintain their languages. I'd say that's something that's very important to the University of Arizona. We are on the land of the Odom and the Yaqui, and this center, it's going to serve indigenous communities in Arizona, California, Nevada, and Utah, which is where a lot of our students are coming from. The new center, essentially, it'll be an extension of what our university's American Indian language development has already been doing for decades. So it's exciting to see that they'll be able to build upon that work and really make sure that we're able to promote the use of tribal languages as an aspect of revitalization efforts. And then I guess other things that are happening, the Princeton Review, they put out their list again. We're on it. I'm very excited about that. So University of Arizona is considered one of the best value colleges for 2024. And if anyone out there isn't aware of what the Princeton Review's best colleges list is, essentially they comprise only about 8% of universities, four-year universities, I should say, based on things like ROI, so return on investment, academics, cost, affordability, financial aid, career prep, graduation rates, and student debt. So we are on that list and we are excited about it. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention sports. Anyone who loves sports pays attention to it, possibly more than I do. For all the sports fans out there, Arizona has officially moved to the Big 12. So we are no longer in the Pac-12 conference. So I'm excited to see the Wildcats play other Big 12 schools like Baylor and TCU. And then if anyone's watching the Olympics or is going to be watching the Olympics, we actually have former and current Wildcats that are competing and representing 9 different countries. So not just the United States, there are actually Wildcats on 8 other countries' teams. So Arizona, you're going to find it everywhere.
Well, that's awesome. And I love that you have a Bachelor's of Science in Real Estate, the first of its kind in the great state of Arizona. You talked about your new center related to tribal communities in terms of preserving their language, their culture, and everything else, which is fantastic. And of course, the Princeton Review has you up as a best value university, which is always a great thing. So campus life is something that's really important to students, obviously, Molly. So what are some unique aspects of your campus life, of course, at the University of Arizona? And what are some of your more popular extracurricular opportunities available to your students?
Yeah, so I would say one of the most popular aspects of campus that we love to talk about at the U of A is our location in the Sonoran Desert and our status as the United States' first official UNESCO City of Gastronomy, which is a fancy way of saying that Tucson has the nation's best Mexican food. Yes, I've had students in Southern California fight me on that and say, no, San Diego has the best Mexican food. But according to UNESCO, it's in Tucson, and I can attest there are some amazing restaurants there. In fact, Yelp's number one restaurant in the United States for 2024 is Tumerico, and that is a vegetarian Mexican restaurant in Tucson. Tucson is also home to the nation's oldest Mexican restaurant that's in continuous operation by the same family, El Charro. And El Charro is actually where the chimichanga was invented. And aside from the food, which it is delicious, it's totally worth the wait. Yes, I have waited outside El Charro for 2 hours to get a table because I love it that much. The fact that we are in the Sonoran Desert means that we're close to Saguaro National Park, where you can see the nation's oldest cacti. And we even have quite a few of them on campus in front of Old Main. The saguaro amaze me because so many of them, they're much, much older than we are, and they've lived through historically significant events. And if we take proper care of them, they're going to be around long after we die as well. I would say other fun aspects of campus life, aside from the food, aside from the saguaro, of course, athletics. I touched upon, we're switching conferences. We are a D1 school for vast majority of our teams, like football and basketball and baseball. So I encourage students to join Zona Zoo, which is what we call our student cheering section. And they will have one of the best seats in the house. The student section is definitely the best, and it's a lot of fun. And then, of course, if you don't like sports, or even if you do, there's other things to do that are non-sports related. Our campus is home to the Tucson Festival of Books, held on a weekend in mid-March each year. And this event is free. It's a chance to see about 450 different authors and take home some really cool books to read. Also, we have a wonderful College of Fine Arts, and those students, they put on dozens of shows per year. So even if you're not artistically inclined, your fellow students are, and I definitely encourage people to go see those shows. Aside from that, we do have professional shows at Centennial Hall, off-Broadway. So for instance, in the past, we've had Mean Girls, and this fall, Beetlejuice the musical is coming, Mamma Mia, and Shucked. And then I guess the last thing I would mention about student life that's fairly popular, of course, we have over 400 student clubs and organizations. Greek life plays a pretty prominent role for many of our students. So if a student's looking to join a fraternity or a sorority, they can definitely do that at Arizona.
Well, it definitely sounds like you have a rich student life. You mentioned so many things. First off, your location, which sounds terrific. You mentioned the cuisine, culture, your athletics, just to name a few. So of course, Molly, visiting campus is so important to help students and their families determine whether or not the University of Arizona, for example, is the right fit for them. So if a student is fortunate enough to visit, what are some of the must-see areas on campus, and what are some examples of really good questions that they can ask to help them determine whether or not it's the right fit for them?
Yeah. Well, first, I would say if you are not fortunate to visit campus, we do have a virtual tour. And even if you are fortunate enough to visit campus, taking the virtual tour before you come might not be the worst thing in the world. Before I started working for the university, I actually did the virtual tour. And by the time that I got to campus, it was cool to see all the places in person that I had already learned about online. But if you do come in person, you'll make your way to Old Main, which is where our admissions office is located. And that's kind of the central hub for our campus tours. Highly recommend taking the guided tour. Yes, of course, because we're a public university, you can always walk around campus and do a self-guided tour. But if you sign up for a guided campus tour, those are going to be led by current Arizona students. And that is the perfect place to ask questions about student life, because you're going to be getting answers from actual students on our campus. They're all Arizona ambassadors, and essentially Arizona ambassadors are students who volunteer their time to share with prospective families all the wonderful things that they love about the U of A. And essentially the campus tour, it's going to take you through the major spots on campus. You'll get to walk up and down the University Mall, which is what we call that walkway that's lined with palm trees. It's really beautiful. If you've ever seen any pictures of our campus, you've probably seen a picture of that. And then after your tour, I'd encourage you to either grab a bite to eat in our student union so you can get a feel for what kind of food options we have on campus. Or if you're in town for a day or two and you're feeling a bit adventurous, definitely hop on the streetcar. That is what our public transit is. It's called the Sunlink. And take it to downtown Tucson. So downtown Tucson is where you're going to find that nation's best Mexican food. There's great shops, boutiques, and restaurants, and it's not too far away from campus. For me, no trip to Tucson is complete without visiting downtown. And a lot of my favorite shops and restaurants, they're either on or near historic 4th Avenue. As far as questions to ask when visiting, I recommend asking questions about the student experience, since it is going to be unique to your tour guide. And each student has their own incredible story for why they chose to attend the University of Arizona. Every tour I've ever taken with our student ambassadors, I always ask that because I get a different answer every time. And it reminds me why I love the university so much.
Well, that's terrific. And I love how you emphasize in the beginning of your answer, the virtual tours, which is so important, because sometimes visiting, especially if you're trying to go to a school that's out of state, is not so easy to do. Number one, it might be financial, but if you have the means, it might be just having a hard time organizing everyone's schedule, particularly if you're trying to visit a school that's far away from home while it is in session. So the virtual tour is definitely, you know, a great option. And like you said, it's fun to see all of these places virtually, and then eventually you'll see them on campus. Now, we always advise that if you can't visit before applying, which is the case for many students and their families out there, you owe it to yourself if you can to try to visit before actually matriculating. Perhaps after getting that acceptance letter, you know, it's a great experience to visit a school even one time just to really determine whether or not it's the right fit for you. Would you agree with that, Molly?
Yeah, absolutely. I always know that finances can be a big barrier for students visiting campuses. So I would say, you know, yes, perhaps, especially if it's a more selective school, I would probably wait until I got good news that I'd been admitted to visit. However, some students, they want to see it before they choose to apply. But yes, if a student has the opportunity to visit even just once before deciding, I think it's a great opportunity. We even have admitted student day. A lot of universities do. And that usually is in April. If a student has one opportunity to visit the University of Arizona, I always recommend Admitted Student Day because you're going to meet other students who have been admitted from all over the country. It's a really fun day. It's a great way to see the campus. Maybe you already know that you want to come to Arizona and you want to celebrate, or maybe you're still trying to make up your mind and that event is a good event to determine your fit for Arizona.
I appreciate that. And I'm assuming that in terms of students demonstrating their interest, if you have a student that applied that didn't visit in person, that has no bearing on their application or acceptance chances, correct?
Correct. Yes. We are never going to penalize a student if they haven't come to campus. We get students from all over the country and we know that it's not economically feasible. So if you can't afford to visit every campus you're applying to, don't worry. That is not part of the process.
Very good. I appreciate that. And can you walk us through the application review process, of course, at the University of Arizona? And what specific factors and attributes do admissions officers prioritize when evaluating those applications?
Yes, yeah. So all of this is on our website. So if after you're listening to this, you think, oh, I want to see this. I'm a visual learner. If you go to arizona.edu/admissions, you can find all that info. And I'd like to think that our office, we're really transparent when it comes to admission factors and our review process. For many students that will apply to the University of Arizona, they are going to be admitted through our assured admission process. And I always like to call these students admitted, not yet submitted. So submit that app and let us know you're interested in coming. And for assured admission, a student needs to either be in the top 25% of their graduating class from a regionally accredited high school, or they have to have an unweighted 3.0 GPA through their sixth semester and have completed all the core competency requirements. Now, those requirements, they are listed on the website, and they basically are also known as the Sweet 16 because they are 16 different courses. So we're going to be looking for 4 years of English, 4 years of math, 3 years of science, 2 years of the same second language, 2 years of social science, and 1 year of career and technical education. Now, oftentimes students will say, well, Molly, what if I don't know what my ranking is? I don't know if I'm in the top 25%. That's where that OR factor comes into play. So if they have the other components. And then for students to say, well, I don't have all 16 of those classes. Maybe I'm missing a year of science. Does that mean that I'm not going to get into Arizona? No, it just means that we are going to review that application differently. So if a student doesn't meet the assured admission criteria, that's okay. We review those students holistically. So we are going to look at their grades, the rigor of coursework that they've taken, their overall grade trends throughout high school, extracurriculars, and if they choose to write one, the optional personal statement.
Well, thank you so much for that comprehensive overview. You mentioned the website, arizona.edu/admissions, which of course I always link in the show notes. Molly, if there are any other links that you want me to share with the students and their parents, just send it to me. And of course, we'll make it available in the show notes, particularly if there's something related to your assured admissions criteria, which you explained you have to be in your top 25% in terms of your graduating class or a 3.0 unweighted GPA in order to be considered for that. But again, if there's anything you want to link, just send it to me and we'll make it available in the show notes. So let's unpackage all of this a little bit further. You touched upon so much. So I know, for example, that the University of Arizona is test optional. Molly, could you share approximately how many students who were admitted did not submit their test scores?
Yeah, so I don't have an exact number, and I was looking last night to see if I could pull specific data, but then I thought about it. Really, just I would say 9 times out of 10, a student is not applying with the test score, and I will explain why. Now, if a student meets the criteria for assured admission, so if they have that unweighted 3.0, they've taken all the core courses, or they're in the top 25% of their graduating class, they're already automatically going to be admitted. So it's not going to be a huge surprise when they get their acceptance letter, but hopefully it'll still be nevertheless exciting. But because they know that, I always encourage them, you know, save your money and don't send your test scores to the university unless we really need them for some reason. And I would say it's rare that we ever would. Maybe if a student, they need it to fulfill a core competency requirement, perhaps a student didn't take a single year of math in high school, but they got a perfect score on their math portion of the SAT. I would say that's rare, but a test score could fulfill one of those requirements that we're looking for. But more often than not, students don't need to submit test scores to be admitted at Arizona. In fact, the W.A. Franke Honors College, which it is a supplemental application and it is a more competitive application process compared to our main campus application, honors is test blind. So even if a student has a perfect SAT score, it's not going to be considered for the honors admission process.
Well, that's really good to know. And, you know, again, earlier you mentioned as part of your assured admissions criteria that you're looking at a 3.0 GPA unweighted. So my follow-up to that is, do you use the student's high school GPA as indicated on their transcript, or do you recalculate that GPA using your own metrics?
We definitely recalculate. And I think that's a great question that if students are unsure, they should ask all of the admission counselors that they're working with. Oftentimes, families will be confused and say, well, my son has a 4.2 or I have a 3.8. And in actuality, that's not the case at Arizona because we're looking at a very specific list of classes, those core competency classes. So the Sweet 16 classes, those are the only classes that we're calculating into a student's GPA for both admission purposes and potential scholarship opportunities. So we're looking at the unweighted 6-semester core. So when I say 6-semester, I'm referring to any of those classes that a student took in their freshman, sophomore, or junior years of high school, unweighted, and the core would be those 16 classes. We certainly look at rigor for admission purposes, and I know that the Franke Honors College, they love to see rigorous coursework, but for equity purposes, we recalculate using the unweighted GPA. We know that not every high school in the country offers the same amount of AP or honors or IB courses. So in order to keep it equitable for students applying from all over the country, that's why we're looking at the unweighted GPA. And for any students or families out there who are thinking, well, this isn't advantageous for my students and they're being punished because they have a higher GPA or they took weighted courses, you're not being punished. You've had a wonderful academic experience in high school, and that's only going to better prepare you for college.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Having a rich academic experience throughout high school is definitely not a punishment, no matter what, right? And I appreciate you talking about the fact that it is a really good question to ask. It's a typical question that I do ask on the podcast episodes, but students, if there's a school that you're interested in, perhaps it's not on the podcast list, right? Ask that question. How do you look at the GPA? Do you look at it based on what's reported on the transcript? Do you recalculate? Are you looking only at the core subjects? This is a very important thing and a fair question to ask an admissions rep, whether you're seeing them on campus or at a college fair. So digging deeper, right, just unpackaging the overall application process here. The personal essay is an opportunity for you to get to know a student better without meeting them in person, right? So what advice would you give students in terms of what to avoid when working on their essays?
Yeah, well, I'll also remind them, if you meet the criteria for assured admission, congrats, you're going to be admitted. You don't need to write that personal statement. It really is optional. So if a student's emailing me and I know that they have the criteria for assured admission and they're asking, yes, you can write it if you want to, but if you meet that criteria, you are going to be admitted. At Arizona specifically, I would say the personal statement, it's going to be much more important for any supplemental applications, such as our W.A. Franke Honors College, that for sure is going to be a very important component in your application. And advice I would give, and this is probably a no-brainer, but avoid using the wrong university name. I can't tell you how many I've seen a fair share of students, they are writing about why they want to go to ASU or insert any other college name here that isn't the U of A. So be sure to, you know, read the prompt carefully, actually answer whatever the question is that's being asked of you, and be genuine. And of course, proofread and make sure you're sending the right essay to the right university. Essays, personal statements, they should be in your own voice. It should be your own story. It shouldn't be your parents. It shouldn't be what your counselor thinks is going to be the best answer. It should be something that is important to you. And I also like to tell students, it doesn't have to be anything amazing, like curing cancer or inventing a you know, new device. It really should just be an opportunity for students to tell us more about themselves and share information beyond their grades. I think some of my favorite personal statements I've read from students, it wasn't the content that was in the personal statement, it was how they wrote it. And I felt like I really got to know them. It had excellent, you know, tone and voice, as well as demonstrating their writing ability.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you talk about that. It's not so much the topic necessarily, but it's how you use whatever topic you choose, students, to really give insight in terms of who you are as a person while maintaining your authentic voice, right? If there's a word that you don't typically say in everyday conversation, perhaps avoid using those words in an essay because it's perhaps not going to come off as being so authentic. Would you agree with that, Molly, or not?
Absolutely. Leave the thesaurus at home or leave ChatGPT in the sidelines.
I love it. That's awesome. Now, you mentioned earlier that the personal statement is, in fact, optional, but I just want to clarify, it's optional for students that meet the assured admissions criteria?
It's optional for all of our students. The Great. Only time that it would not be optional is if you're applying to our Honors College. So is a required component of our Honors College application. But for students that are applying just to the University of Arizona main campus application, it is optional. If you're worried about your grades or your GPA, I always like to say the personal statement gives us more information to work with, more information about a student, but you don't have to write one if you don't want to.
Understood, and I'm glad I asked that question. So for the Honors College, it is not optional. It's required. In addition to the personal essay, are there additional supplementals? And if so, if you could just elaborate in terms of like what are the types of questions that you're asking for those supplemental essays?
Yeah, so it depends. For instance, we have an accelerated pathway for medical education or the APME program, where students basically they're applying to medical school at the same time that they're applying to college. So if they're admitted, they get in to Arizona for undergrad and they're promised a spot in our MD program. I know that they have their own kind of questions. I don't know what they are. I haven't read applications for that specific program. But for honors, it's usually just one personal statement. The prompt will be on their website. Definitely, you know, pay attention to what they're asking. And then other components that they would ask for, you'll need one letter of recommendation and then an activities resume. So I would say that the required personal statement and the letter of recommendation are the main differences from the honors application versus the main campus application.
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, we've touched upon so much, but can you elaborate on the support services available at the University of Arizona, such as academic advising, mental health resources, and even career counseling?
Yes. And I know, you know, we don't have hours here, so I'll just give you a brief rundown. But we have a lot of services on our campus. I think that's one of the benefits of going to a large public university, especially one like Arizona, where they do care about providing funding for these resources that our students want, that they need, that they deserve. So the A Center, that's our advising center, that is a really great place for students to go if they have no idea what they want to major in. Now, some students think, oh, I have to apply for X major in order to apply to college. You can absolutely apply undecided, or even if you apply to a specific major and you change your mind, that's what the ACE Center advisors are there to do. They're there to help you find your best fit major. The ACE Center also provides resources for students who know exactly what they want to do, and they want to go to law school or medical school or any kind of professional program beyond the undergraduate four-year degree. They can help students make sure that they're competitive for those application processes as well. Aside from the ACE Center, most recently, which it probably was almost done when you spoke to Joe back in 2022, but the Student Success District, that was completed in spring of 2022. And this is a central location that is going to have lots of different student resources. The ACE Center has an office there, our tutoring centers, and it centrally locates things like our tutoring services, the libraries. It provides study spaces for students, collaboration, and hands-on learning stations. So that's centrally located in campus. And if students do come for a campus tour, they will get to see parts of that Student Success District. But other things that are represented in the Student Success District, the think tank, that's what we call our tutoring resources. There's the Thrive Center, and that builds community for students that are typically underrepresented on college campuses, such as students that come from low-income backgrounds or first-generation students. Fun fact, about 1 in 3 students at Arizona is a first-generation student, so there's a lot of support there. Speaking of support, we also have something called SOS, which stands for Support, Opportunity, and Success. And this program was created for students if they have questions, really any question that they can't find the answer to. They have 24/7 support. You can text, you can email, you can call. They do have a very helpful FAQs page, but if a student's wondering, you know, I just went to my first class and I really don't like this class, what is the deadline to drop this class and get into another one? They can help them with those different aspects and navigating campus, whether they're a new student or they've been on campus for a couple of years. Let's see, other programs that we have, we do have a transfer student center. So if a student is looking specifically for resources to help them as a transfer student, we've got that. There's the Student Engagement and Career Development Center on campus. Really great if you're looking to get out on the job market, you want help with your cover letters or your resume or interview practice, job fairs, all of those fun things to make sure that you're going to have something waiting for you by the time you graduate. Sometimes our students get job offers before they even graduate, which is really exciting. And then, of course, mental health resources. The Counseling and Psychological Services, also known as CAPS, universities love acronyms, and I think that's a fairly common acronym at other universities, but they have a ton of different counseling resources for students. There's group counseling, peer counseling, couples counseling, survivor support groups for students that might have substance abuse problems or eating disorders or body image concerns. We do have workshops. They have the, you know, fun therapy fluffies. They bring out the dogs right before finals week. If you want to pet a cute dog, do it. It'll make you feel better. And I've even seen they'll do some free workshops on nutrition. So how to cook healthier, how to make sure you're eating properly, so many different things. And then the last thing I'll mention is the SALT Center. So a lot of people, if they do have learning or attention differences, they've probably already heard of it. But the SALT Center is a program unique to the University of Arizona. It is an acronym that stands for Strategic Alternative Learning Techniques. And this is a really great program for students if they, you know, want to go to a large public school, but they are looking for a smaller academic support service for any learning or attention differences that they have. Any student that's in the SALT Center, they do have a learning specialist that they meet with regularly, one-on-one. It's going to be the same learning specialist throughout their time in the program. If they want to be in the program all 4 years, they can. If they just want to do it their freshman year, that's okay too. But we do find that a lot of our students, they love the program and they keep returning. So I could keep going, but those are the highlights that I would touch upon.
Well, those are a lot of highlights and very important. And I do think that it's important for students. Don't be bashful to ask the question, what types of supports does the university have? Again, whether you're on campus or you're at a college fair, and you touched upon so many, Molly, all under the umbrella of academic supports, mental health supports, and even all your career counseling. There really sounds like there is something for everyone. And obviously, you're very mindful of getting the right students on your campus. But perhaps even more important is that once they're on your campus, you want to make sure that they continue to be supported, not only during the 4 years for their bachelor's, but also in their career planning. So we really appreciate that. And this has been a phenomenal conversation. We've covered so much. Before I get to the last question, Molly, I just have to ask, is there a question that I didn't ask or a topic that I didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
Yeah, so this is super random, and I'm guessing you've never had this in any of your other podcast episodes, but on my bucket list of things to visit on the U of A's campus is the History of Pharmacy Museum, and I haven't been able to go yet because they have, you know, different hours of operation or I'm in meetings, but I am determined to see it in person one day. Reason why? Well, a few reasons. If you can see behind me that Disneyland map, I'm a huge Disneyland fan. I also have a bachelor's and a master's in history. It really, really fascinates me. And basically, the Upjohn Pharmacy Collection, it is the largest archival collection of artifacts from the pharmacy that was on Main Street in Disneyland from 1955 when the park opened to 1970. And so I always ask students, you know, are you a Disneyland fan? Do you like Disneyland? And then say, hey, well, you can see this on our campus. Because basically when Walt Disney was building Disneyland, he needed corporate partnerships. And so that was a way that they could offset the cost of the park. So he had, you know, PepsiCo, Santa Fe Railroad, Carnation, they were all sponsors. And then he got the Upjohn Pharmacy as a sponsor because he really wanted Main Street to look like a, you know, like a small town, and small towns have pharmacies on their streets. And so when it was in operation, guests could purchase Disneyland branded vitamins or even prescriptions for pixie dust magic, which was just glitter in a jar. And those go for hundreds, if not thousands of dollars in Disney auctions nowadays. So it's a super obscure fact about the University of Arizona, but I think it's amazing that the U of A has touched so many different aspects of the world. I actually learned that fun fact from a gallerist at Van Eaton Galleries in Southern California, and they specialize in high-end Disney auctions. And when he found out that I worked for the University of Arizona, he asked me if I had seen the collection. yes, we have a great College of Pharmacy, and they have a very cool museum. So you never know what you're going to find on the University of Arizona's campus.
Well, I love that. And this is one of the reasons why we have these conversations. Number one, we try to unpackage and get facts that aren't ordinarily seen on, for example, you know, the website by just doing a simple Google search. But when I'm on campus, I'm definitely visiting the History of Pharmacy Museum. I've been not only to Disneyland, but also to Disney World. So I'm a big Disney fan like you, Molly. So we really appreciate that fun fact. And again, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I can't thank you enough for being here. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are the top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I thought about this the most. And right now, I would say these are my three pieces of advice. So one, create a well-balanced list of colleges that you plan to apply to. So have one or two reach schools, two or three target schools, and two or three likely schools. Now, you'll notice I did not use the word safety school because every school that is on your college list should be a school that you would like to attend if you got in. So don't apply to schools that you have no intention of attending, because then my second piece of advice would be to be open-minded about where you might attend college. And don't get caught up in the rankings and the misconceptions that you might have about prestige. There are literally thousands of colleges in the United States, and the chances are more than one of them is going to be a great fit for you. Fit means a lot of different things. It means academic fit. Do they have the major that you're looking for? Social and environmental fit. Is it in a part of the country where you would be happy to be living? And do you like the weather? Do you like the activities that are available and the student traditions? All of those different social things, but also financial fit. It needs to have all the components to be the best fit for you. And I can guarantee there's at least one school out there that is going to hit all three of those big fit factors for a student. And then my last piece of advice, mainly for parents, advice piece three, parents, do not impersonate your children via email and text message. We know that it's you, and it's important for students to learn how to take ownership of their college search process. I've definitely been to high schools before, and I visited with students who had been admitted to Arizona, and they didn't even know that they had applied because their mother had applied for them. And that's not going to be super helpful right. for their college experience. Right. They're the ones that are going to college, and parents, you're not going to be going to class with them every day. So the student should be the one driving that decision. Of course, have the tough conversations about family finances, have those conversations. But at the end of the day, I've noticed that when parents are a little too involved with their students' application process, students are going to have a harder time adjusting to adult responsibilities, like checking their email every day, responding to action items pertaining to their orientation process, and so forth. So I hope that parents know that they've probably already done an amazing job of raising their students, and now it's time to let the student have more ownership in the process.
Well, that's great advice to the students and the parents. And I love how you talked about the fact that it's so important to create a well-balanced list. Think about it, students. If you're only applying to schools that are accepting 15%, for example, of the applicants or less, that school is a reach school for everybody. Doesn't matter if you have a 4.0 unweighted GPA, you were the president of your class, what have you. If you're applying only to schools that are that competitive, it is a reach school for anyone and everyone. And so I love what you said. Pick a few schools that are reach schools, target and likely, and don't apply to schools that you will never, ever consider attending. That doesn't help you, nor does it help anyone else in terms of, you know, yields and the challenges that many schools have in terms of determining how many people apply that would actually attend if they're accepted. So Molly, this has been a phenomenal conversation, so comprehensive. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to chat, and I do hope to have you again. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun, and if anyone out there has questions about Arizona, don't hesitate to contact your friendly regional recruiter. That is what we are here for.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And to all the students, parents, and even the counselors that are listening out there, good luck to everyone and best wishes. Take care. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.